Okay, so now it's my pleasure to introduce to you Jeff Parker. He started his career in San Diego, California, with Manpower in 1996. Then he had the good fortune to move to New Mexico in 2000 to run the Manpower New Mexico operation. In 2009, because New Mexico wasn't big enough, he added on Washington and Idaho to his territory. And then just this year, he was promoted to vice president, and he added on Arizona and Nevada. So he's got a lot of states to cover. He's been recognized as one of New Mexico's top 40 under 40. He received an award from the Department of Labor, the E3 Award for Manpower's Tech Reach Program. And he's been on a lot of community boards, including Albuquerque Economic Development. And he's also been active with the Association of Commerce and Industry. He's got a lot of, he's been recognized as a power broker in the state of New Mexico by the New Mexico Business Weekly. So we really are lucky to have a person of his caliber to speak to us today. He's going to share his knowledge, and you're going to really enjoy his presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me this morning. I'm excited to share with you some of the private sector issues around the changing world of work and what we can expect moving forward in the workplace, and I'm going to take it from a global, national, local, and sometimes very specific municipality role. A little bit about me. I have been with the company for 16 years. I did start in San Diego, California, which at the time was booming with telecom. So I've been in a boom type of market. And then the owners of the company said, move out to Albuquerque. That was in 2000. And so I moved out here sight unseen and was able to take this market up to the size of New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles. So Albuquerque and the entire New Mexico area was able to be one of the top performing offices in North America. And so they said, oh, you did such a good job, go to Spokane now. And so I've done that. And they said, oh, you did such a good job, take on Las Vegas and Arizona now. So I've done that. So most of my time is spent on a plane, and I manage many Western franchises. I also have the opportunity to interface a lot with our executives at the global level. So I get a good perspective of what's happening in the Asia markets, the European markets, and our South American markets. And so that gets me on a plane to Milwaukee or San Diego and other locations. So let's look at just Manpower so that you understand who we are. We are a private company. We're publicly traded. And we do employment. We do everything around employment. We do everything from the onboarding process, recruitment, placement, management of those employees, training of those employees, including an outplacement arm. So when our clients come to us and they say, we're going to do a layoff, we have an arm that does that. There's a lot more technology involved in the recruitment process. As you can see here, we are in 82 countries. We have over 800 offices in North America. We employ 3 million employees worldwide. And I can tell you in the territories that I service, we do about 100,000 W-2s each year. So I have the great pleasure of being able to say, I impacted 100,000 families by providing a paycheck to them. So when you think of temporary services, you need to think of a flexible workforce because that is the changing world of work. A flexible workforce is what's going to be happening today and next decade and beyond. It's already happening in many countries, and we're going to need to look at our national and local policies to accommodate a flexible workforce. I'll talk a little bit about flexible workforce a little bit later on. But let's get specific to New Mexico and how the world of work is changing here. We know we are losing jobs. Albuquerque, I believe, is in its 60th straight month of either no job growth or negative job growth, job loss. So for a metropolitan area, being at the bottom of many, many surveys like the Brookings Institution, The Economist, which is a favorite publication of mine, just recently, in this week's issue, as a matter of fact, ranks Albuquerque as the slowest or negative growth at the bottom of the list, metropolitan areas. when we are in this type of situation, there's something wrong. We need to really look at what our economy is comprised of. We know we're losing federal jobs, and that's coming from a national level. We know we're losing manufacturing jobs for the most part, although they have started to tick up. We're ticking up from a deficit. So therefore, we need to understand that those jobs that were outsourced overseas to China and other countries, maybe they were Eastern European countries, are not going to come back to the United States. Because although the wages in China and those other countries are beginning to increase, there's always another market to go into. So we're seeing a lot of the clothing manufacturers go into Burma and go into Vietnam. So let's not count on those types of jobs returning back to the United States anytime soon without some profound changes to our policies. There's a tax competitiveness issue in the United States. We have the highest corporate income tax and highest personal income tax in the rich world. And so there's not a lot of reason to stay here. When you hear about companies putting their accounts offshore, it's because they're taxed less, to be honest with you. I'm not going to say that's good, right, or indifferent. It's just a fact. And we have to understand our true talent pool. As we look at technology reinventing work and the skills mismatch or talent scarcity, we have to look at what our true talent pool is here in New Mexico. And, of course, we have an uphill battle against all the negative media. Being at the bottom of every list, whether it's in healthcare, whether it's in education, whether it is in economic growth or wages, we have an uphill battle to fight, and we need to unite together as a state and understand what that means and how we can overcome that. So this is truly ironic, considering that we have so many issues regarding the number of unemployed currently. But the United States is going to need to attract and retain more than 25 million workers by 2030 in order to stay competitive. The New Mexico labor force, as we know, has shrunk. So are those people leaving? Are they not being engaged in the workforce? What is it? We're beginning to see a fluidity once again in people being willing to move and take that risk as the perception of the economy is getting better. So they are taking that risk and moving jobs once again. And sometimes that move means moving out of state. Yesterday it was announced that the housing market is seeing a drastic improvement. That drastic improvement in the housing market is allowing people who were once unable to sell their home because they were underwater to finally get out from under that home and move to where the jobs are. And this is why they're leaving. This is why employees are leaving. Employees are disgruntled and disengaged. So 71% say that their workloads have increased due to layoffs. And I bet you that many people, although this was not included in this survey, and it was a manpower survey, I believe that many people, and it may be closer to 80%, said that they are getting paid the same amount of money for more work. Many of us do not use our vacation time. I know I see it on my pay stub every time I get paid, how much I have available in vacation time. And unfortunately, that number doesn't go down, and that means that I am working more and more. We know that people aren't taking their lunch break, and we know that people are not working or are working more than 40 hours a week. Actually, the productivity level due to the amount of people working longer hours has increased, which means that companies do not have to hire as many people. And you can look for that trend to continue in the United States in particular, as our productivity, the U.S. worker is known for being a productive worker. So as our productivity continues to increase, the demand for as many workers will decrease. around the world, the working age population is shrinking. And you can see on this graph here that really, if you've talked about or heard about the European crisis, is truly a crisis because they do not have enough working people who are employed. When you think about Spain having 25% unemployment and 50% youth unemployment, they don't have enough people to take care of their elderly on social programs. Luckily, the United States is keeping pace and is expected to keep pace, but that expectation is based upon immigration. It's not through us having more babies, it's about us attracting more people into the United States. You can see Mexico is really about to fall off a cliff because between 1970 and 2010, they had a huge population boom, but now that population is aging. What does that mean for the world of work? That means more of those younger workers are being displaced by the older workers that have to continue working. And what that means for companies is that they will look to some of the younger countries with a higher populations in order to meet demand. This is always rather startling to me. By 2020, there will be 123 million high-skilled, high-paying jobs available in the United States, but only 50 million Americans will have the right skills to fill them. What does this statistic say? This statistic says that we are encouraging our youth to go get the wrong degrees. I am a huge proponent, and many of you in the workforce community know, I am a huge proponent of vocational degrees. Not everyone needs a bachelor's degree in order to be successful. Welders, electricians, plumbers, pipe fitters, machinists can earn somewhere between $40,000 to $60,000 a year in the state of New Mexico. In Los Angeles, an electrician can earn $40 an hour for their services. Service jobs are just as important as knowledge-based jobs. Service jobs cannot be outsourced or offshored. And so we need to remember the importance of vocational training. Additionally, our counselors in schools, many of us in the public sector, many of us within the private sector who have kids, tell our children, you must go to university, you must get a degree. But the conversation stops there. We don't tell them what the right degree is. And if we were to look at some of the statistics on what is coming in the future by 2020 and 2030, we can see that absolutely we need more people with the STEM education. We need more people with the healthcare education. But we don't need so many art historians. One additional point on that is that what we have found today on resumes is that many students are getting trapped in the education community. And so they come out with a degree, find out that it's not useful to them, go back and get another degree, find out that there's still no jobs available to them, go back and get another degree. So they have to leave the nest sometime, and we need to make that easier for them here in New Mexico and across the United States. I really love demographics, and the reason is because they're so telling. This is from the United States Census, and all of this is available on census.gov. The state population topped over 2 million in 2010, and you can see the tan areas are areas that are losing population. And then the darker the blue, the more the population growth. And of course, the darkest blue on this map is Sandoval County. We all know about the growth in Rio Rancho. And because of companies like Intel and Hewlett-Packard, you can see what it does to demographics. Rio Rancho, Sandoval County is also one of the younger counties in the state of New Mexico. So when economic developers and when state officials officials go out and try to bring companies to New Mexico, they can say we have a very young, active workforce here. But then you can also see that people are moving out of the rural areas and into centers of work, the urban areas. And what's so important to note about that is that that's not specific to New Mexico. That's specific to the globe. For the first time in history, in the past decade, more people lived in an urban area than a rural area around the globe. And so we're seeing this, and when it comes to policy decision making, although we need to support our rural areas and do the best that we can to make sure that the people, I live in a rural area, we need to do the best that we can to make sure that the people in the rural areas have essential services like telecommunications that make it easier to telecommute to work, which is a huge trend in the changing world of work. We have Sitel, a call center that does a lot of their hiring now in Albuquerque through telecommuting. We have many telecommuters in the Taos area, but we need to realize that we need to provide the infrastructure to allow people to live in those rural areas, to take care of the family farms. We need to make sure that they are able to provide for those local economies. But we also need to understand that urbanization will continue to grow. I hear this all the time from clients, whether I'm in San Diego or Milwaukee or talking on the phone with my counterparts in Brazil. In the United States, we are wrestling with a high level of unemployment. Although the unemployment percentage is down, we know that the number of people who are looking for meaningful work is still not where we want it to be, to where they are fully employed. Maybe they have two part-time jobs or a part-time job. But 52% of employers are reporting difficulty in filling positions. They're having such a hard time because of the skills mismatch. What I said about coming out of school and with the wrong degrees and the expectations that now that I have this degree, then I can be the supervisor at a company and be a lawyer immediately and not work through the ranks. Unfortunately, we don't have those entry-level types of positions for people to work through the ranks. I worked through the ranks. I started as a recruiter. Then I moved up to a manager, and then a director, and then a vice president. And we don't have enough of those opportunities anymore because it is so competitive in the world of work right now. I do have to say that we are going to see a lot of impacts from Obamacare, the Affordable Health Care Act, on this skills mismatch, on opportunities, on the world of healthcare, and in my business. I'm actually rather lucky to be in the business that I am today. Although I've had a very difficult 4 or 5 years through the recession, we're looking at more and more employers coming to us saying, we don't want to deal with affordable health care. We don't want to deal with the implications of it. You take our employees. So they will be payrolled through Manpower. They will be Manpower employees. And so therefore, they will have a flexible workforce. Because of the tax liability that's upon them, they're looking for every way to get out from under the regulations and the implications of the Affordable Health Care Act. So I just need to create a plan, a benefits plan, which I already have, that will meet the qualifications of the Affordable Health Care Act. And you'll see many, many companies do whatever they can do to stay under that number of 50 employees that the Affordable Health Care Act requires you to have insurance. So if you have 50 or more employees, you have to provide your employees insurance. If you have 49, you don't. So you will see companies not hire specifically to avoid regulations and ramifications, not only with the Affordable Health Care Act, but a lot of other things. So back when I started working, when you hired an admin assistant, they needed to be able to type, to be able to calendar some appointments, to be able to do some meeting prep, and really they had the big AS400 IBM green screen computers, you know, the where you would do the word processing, and that's pretty much all that was on it. There was no color back in those days. Everything was black and green. Well, today, an admin assistant actually needs extensive IT skills, knowing project, PowerPoint, Excel formulas, Word, doing all sorts of charts and graphs and presentations, coordinating many people. As to where an individual had an admin assistant, we are seeing whole departments of executives having one admin assistant, arranging webinars, doing fact-finding, doing research. That has changed. It will continue to change. And I'll tell you, the number one reason why not only the hard skills are important, but the soft skills are important is because the reason most people who are employed through Manpower are let go is because our clients tell us they were late and they don't show up to work. That is the number one reason. Number one. So not only do you have to have the hard skills, you have to have the soft skills. Here are the top 10 hardest jobs to fill in the United States. This is an annual Manpower survey. It's always skilled trades. Those electricians, those pipe fitters, those welders. Are you kind of hearing a similar thing come out of my mouth over and over again? That not all jobs require a bachelor's or master's degree. However, number three is engineers, accounting and finance. This comes up over and over, sometimes in mixed order, but it is usually the same. So that's across the United States. We're seeing a lot of companies come to us today, yesterday, and tomorrow, saying, I need an administrative assistant who can also do QuickBooks, who can also manage the production department, can make sure that our healthcare and benefits are meeting expectations, and also make sure they can do payroll. We refer to those people as purple squirrels in my industry because there are no such things as a purple squirrel in nature. Although if you go online and Google it, you will find someone who died a purple squirrel. It is, you know, a very telling thing in business today that we are asking people not to wear one or two hats, but maybe have a whole hat collection. There's always a fear to hire. So previous to the election, I heard, I'm not going to hire until after the election. After the election, I'm not going to hire until after the fiscal cliff. After the fiscal cliff, I'm not going to hire until after I understand what's going to be happening with the healthcare rules. I'm not going to hire until whatever is next. So for years, we've been hearing the reasons and excuses not to hire since the recession. I think that we just need to get used to, I'm not going to hire until I have absolute confidence that I will have the business for the next multiple years to provide for the employee. Layoffs hurt. Terminating someone's employment is awful. It is the worst part of my job to go into a company and have to lay off 10, 20, 30 people. And I always appreciate those clients that have me do it around the holidays. Having to do that is terrible. But it's a part of today's and the future economy of flexible work. Before we got started here today, I was talking a little bit about cross-border recruitment. And in New Mexico, we don't have a lot of cross-border recruitment, although there are signs of it happening along the Santa Teresa border, where we are utilizing workers from both sides of the border. But in Europe, it's so pervasive that when Shot Solar opened up here in New Mexico, we were lucky enough to be a part of that. They sent all of our temporaries overseas to, could you imagine this? You get hired and they send you to Spain, Germany, or the Czech Republic for 3 months of training, and they pay for everything. It was kind of neat. However, our U.S. employees were so productive and did such a good job that the plant manager of the Czech Republic asked if they could keep them and was being really honest with me. And I said, I'm sorry, sir, but that's not allowed here. Well, they do it all the time, cross-border recruitment, because it's very difficult to find and keep skilled labor in those areas, and they have policies around that. So with Germany and the Czech Republic, there's almost an open border of employment. We hear about, in our immigration debates, who's taking our jobs, who's taking our jobs. I'm not sure if that is legitimate all the time as far as a debate item, because those jobs may go unfilled. We already have 25 million jobs that are going to go unfilled. What makes us think that, you know, there are enough people to fill all the jobs in the United States? In New Mexico, the top 10 job advertisements from 2008 through projected to 2018 start with those things that do not require a degree. As a matter of fact, the only thing on this list that requires a degree are nurses and teachers. Those are the only two things that require advanced education. We need to be really cognizant of what is in our wheelhouse when we are talking about employment and economic development. In the state of New Mexico, although we have two very prestigious labs, they attract and retain people, but once they are done, they're shipped to other labs or go to other metropolitan areas where those engineering degrees are readily used. In New Mexico, outside of the labs, they are not. New Mexico just is not on the map for large corporations when it comes to a knowledge-based economy. We are for service. So it's very important that when we announce a new call center, that we look at that as an entry-level job all the way up to someone who's in their accounting department, their HR department, and the site manager who is able to utilize their degree in business or finance or human resources. A call center is more than just 100 people answering a phone. So let's talk about the impacts on the New Mexico labor market. These next few slides are going to go rather quickly because it is things for you all to consider for the upcoming legislative session. LFC, we know we have had job losses from September 11 to September 12. New Mexico is at the bottom of the job market. We're seeing an increase of use of other welfare programs because unemployment insurance has run out. We are questioning where these workers have gone. Is there an underground employment movement here in New Mexico, much like there is in Las Vegas, where it's a 14% unemployment rate, and the true unemployment rate in Las Vegas is estimated to be closer to 21%. In New Mexico, in Nevada, in California, across the country, we're about 25% youth unemployment rate. Personal story, my sister went back to work. She's a stay-at-home mom. She went back to work in retail because her son could not find a job, his first job. We're going to see those gains in productivity that I talked about delay new hires. People are going to put off hiring as long as they can. And younger and older and unskilled workers are going to be squeezed out of our work environment. So some of the things that have been discussed in past legislative sessions have been the effectiveness of tax credits. So do we continue to piecemeal out tax credits like the film subsidy, the high-wage jobs tax credit? These are things that have cost money. Or do we develop an overhaul of our tax structure altogether? This is happening at the federal level and at the state level. You will hear a lot about single-weighted sales factor. Single-weighted sales factor currently in the state of New Mexico, we take into consideration your payroll, your land, and your investment, and as well as your sales to tax a corporation. There are very few corporations that actually pay tax in the state of New Mexico, because most of our businesses are small businesses, which are either an S-corp or people file as personal income tax. Capital outlay is important to our rural areas. the Job Training Incentive Program many of you are very familiar with. It's one of our best tools that we have. It sounds like the unemployment insurance fund will not be highly debated this year, but it is something that is being tossed around in many states across the country because there are hundreds of millions in debt to the United States government. Tourism funding. Yesterday, Secretary Barella unveiled his economic development programs, and you will see right-to-work legislation. The only thing on this that is really important to address is the expansion of Medicaid can bring hundreds of millions of dollars into the state, and the minimum wage issues, we saw that happen in Albuquerque. You can expect something at the state level. Many states are addressing that, whether at municipalities or state levels, and it will continue to be addressed. The basic thing that I'd like you to take away from this is our long-term policies that we have to address as a country, not just as a state, and that is strengthening the alignment between business and education to ensure that the curriculum leads to real-life work experience. When you are doing on-the-job training contracts, when you are working with someone in vocational rehabilitation, we need to make sure that that person's training aligns to the jobs that are open today. And there are tons of resources from the United States Department of Labor to the New Mexico Department of Workforce Solutions that will give you what is open today. So assess them and make sure that they can fit into jobs that are available today. And we need to look at our outcomes of higher education so that workforce can contribute to New Mexico's economic growth. We need to do a better job of taking the monies that we receive from federal agencies, from grants, from the state agencies, and utilize them to put people into real-life work skills. Finally, from an economic development perspective, we need to recruit and retain industries that have demographic or structural drivers of growth in our economy. Let's not try to land the next big auto manufacturer because we don't have employees in the state of New Mexico who are prepared to design and develop cars. We have a wonderful creative arts community, and some of those skills can translate into design. But is it automobile design? Is it engineering design? Not necessarily. We need to look at things like services, tourism, food production from the agricultural communities we have here in Clovis. I know someone here is from Clovis. You know, we are seeing the cheese plant do very well. Food production is a growing industry around the world. Education, and of course, paying attention to our energy and extractive energies. I'd like to thank you for your time today. I went a little bit over, but